It's the morning show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. And it's that time of year. The school year is just days away for students across Wisconsin. Some kids are even already in class. And each year brings its own excitement and challenges. We're talking today about technology in K-12 schools, and we're taking your calls. The number to call is 800-642-1234. You can join in with your questions or comments, and you can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. I want to welcome two guests. Brian Gannon is Student Learning and Technology Coordinator for the South Milwaukee School District. Brian, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
And Rocco Marchanda directs Instructional Technology at the Nina Joint School District. Rocco, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Rocco, the Nina Joint School District blocks students from using artificial intelligence products like ChatGPT on school devices. We're seeing AI all over the place. Why has the school district banned the generative AI on your school devices?
Yeah, that's a great question. Last year, we put a focus on training our teachers in these text-based AI tools. We wanted them to learn how to use them in the classroom to help with their instruction. We wanted our teachers also to be very aware of what these AI tools are and how many different types there are. And so we encouraged our teachers to use them. We have blocked our student use of AI tools like this, basically for reasons of protecting their personally identifiable information and more security like that. We're waiting for some of these areas to mature just a little bit, and we're starting to see that already. We're starting to see in some learning management systems that they're integrating some AI tools, and our main focus was to educate train our teachers on what AI is and how it can be helpful for them while the market started to kind of take into a more student privacy bend. And I know that we're working on that at the state level. It's a good question.
Sure. So you've said we're not going to allow these programs on our school devices, but how effective is that ban in keeping it actually out of the classroom?
Yeah, I mean, it's very true that a student could very well pull out a cell phone or at home, for example, use their own network and own devices to do this. And that's something that we're very well aware that we can't stop. But what we want to do is develop a strong foundation of our teachers understanding what AI is and how they can use it in their classroom. And when we know that these tools can be used with our student information safely, then we're happy to progress forward.
Brian, how is South Milwaukee handling that sort of artificial intelligence that Rocco's saying can kind of be used for good and not so good?
Yeah, we have a very similar stance right now. We're not completely blocking it for students. We reviewed the age requirements for some of the more popular tools like ChatGPT or Bard, and are adjusting permissions based on that. But in our conversations, we talked a lot about what you just discussed, that students, if we block it, students are still going to access it on their own devices, at home, things like that. But then similarly to what Rocco said, we had two groups of teachers who worked throughout the summer to investigate several different AI tools, and came back. Actually, our first day with staff was this past Monday, and they did presentations for all teaching staff to show them, really introductory, what AI is, what the benefits are, where students already were using it last year, and what we see as benefits for using it in the classroom as a teaching tool moving forward. We know that obviously AI is not going anywhere, right? We know that it's going to be something that our students may use. Obviously the fear is out there that students are going to use it for cheating, plagiarism, things like that. But we also understand that this is a tool that can and will benefit them moving forward in their careers. So trying to completely block it didn't seem like the right path for us. So we are embracing the fact that students may use it, and our teachers are going to hit the ground on next Tuesday talking with their students about the use of AI and what the appropriate and inappropriate ways of using it could be.
We're talking with Brian Gannon and Rocco Marchanda about technology in schools. Brian is with South Milwaukee, Rocco with the Neenah Public Schools. We are taking your questions and also an opportunity to share your experiences. You can call 800-642-1234. Brian, talk a little bit more about the potential and why schools should be teaching students how to use AI. We saw the Harvard Business Review says that generative AI programs have the potential to upend most American industries in the coming years. So if more employers are adopting technology, how should schools be teaching it?
Well, I feel like one simple example I can give is there are literally new jobs that have been created in the past 5 months after ChatGPT came out for prompt writers, people who can write strong prompts to get AI to do exactly what you need it to do. Putting in a line, asking it to write a line of code is one thing, but then to have it generate exactly what you need it to do is a little more tricky. So I think it encouraging students to look at it in a way that it's not just, hey, give me an answer to a question, but how do I write a prompt? How do I do something that is, how do I give the information to the AI so that it can give me back the information that I really want, in the voice I want, in the style I want. That kind of lesson that our teachers can give to students, I think it'll help to allow students to learn a lot of information on their own. They can put a prompt in and get information back, and a teacher can be there to support them and help them verify that the information is accurate. And again, learning that now in school will help them move forward into their work environment to be ahead of the game, where if AI really is going to start upending the markets, having that knowledge of how the AI works is going to be beneficial.
Rocco, how do you see artificial intelligence being a benefit in the classroom?
I just sitting here nodding my head with Brian. I have a great example in the classroom. We have many wonderful teachers here, Neenah. With this one particular example is a middle school special education teacher who has students who are intellectually significantly lower than their biological age. And these students are needing to address targets that are learning targets that are at their grade level. So what this teacher was doing with AI was basically asking AI questions about certain social studies topics, for example, feudalism, and comparing it to other things that are going, other topics that the teacher wanted, and having chat bring back a response at a certain grade level and a certain voice, just like Brian was saying. And then what the teacher was doing with the student was adjusting the response, vetting the response to the targets that they were going to have to turn in for the teacher to be assessed on. And I thought it was such an interesting use of AI by proxy through the teacher. And also, like Brian was saying, training these kids how to generate a prompt that gets them what they need, and then vetting that prompt, looking at what does this AI give us, and is this giving us what we need to be successful? So I think there's the toothpaste is out of the tube. It's an incredible tool. And I just love seeing our staff embrace AI in interesting ways. And We have technology coaches and ILTSs here in Neenah that not only are sharing approaches like this, but also collecting approaches from our Neenah staff. And it's a fantastic thing to see.
We have a caller who wants to join this conversation. We've got Bill from Madison. Hey, Bill.
Hello, hello.
What are you thinking right now when we're talking about technology and education?
Well, it seems to me, I don't know much about this, but there's I remember hearing years ago that the ancient Greeks were concerned about writing in the same way, that it would cause people to lose their memories. And for all I know, it probably did to some extent, and I just thought there's probably a long history of this sort of thing. Slide rules, things like that, you know. Why bother to learn multiplication tables when you've got a slide rule, not to mention an adding machine, you know?
Hey, Bill, thank you so much for bringing up and pulling that thread through the fact that as technology changes, our education changes to meet that technology and incorporate it. I also want to welcome Nancy from Madison to this conversation. Hi, Nancy.
Hello. Thank you so much. I came in rather late, but I'm curious whether there is evidence-based work done on AI. Will this mean our children in Wisconsin will be able to read better and that they will be able to do their mathematics better and relate and be more established critical thinkers? What is the evidence base on that with AI?
Nancy, thank you so much. And Rocco, you just spoke about special education teachers using this in reading. Can you address Nancy's question?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not aware of any longitudinal studies. I don't think it actually exists right now because AI is so new. But in the example I was just sharing with you, I really think that teacher was promoting the idea of critical thinking, looking at what AI gives us, and then thinking critically about that response, being creative with the response that you're giving AI to generate things back. I think it inherently a great use of these tools in the classroom promotes what we call the four C's in technology education, critical thinking, creativity, collaboration. We have to wait to see what studies will show, but just like any tool in the hands of great teachers, they're great tools.
Rocco Marchanda is with Neenah Public Schools. Brian Gannon is with South Milwaukee. We're taking stock of technology in schools across the state, and we want to hear from you. Share your thoughts and experiences. Call 800-642-1234. I'm Keely Boltina, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina. Teachers incorporate technology in their lesson plans, and students are learning to be comfortable with modern devices, both to pass their classes and to prepare them for a world beyond school grounds. We're talking about technology in Wisconsin's K-12 schools with Brian Gannon, Student Learning and Technology Coordinator for South Milwaukee Public Schools, and Rocco Marchanda, who directs instructional technology at Neenah Public Schools. We're also taking your questions at 800-642-1234. Mark in Two Rivers is ready to talk with us. Hey, Mark.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
So this is something I've thought about quite a bit, and I'm all for technology in the schools, and I think it needs to be taught, but I think there's a danger of losing grasp of the fundamentals. I'm an engineer, and at my place of business, we focus on the fundamentals and making sure that we start at square one when we're doing calculations and stuff, and we actually have a saying that says, before there was high tech, there was low tech. And low tech, the slide rule, put the Apollo program on the moon. And I think there's a danger of losing touch with the fundamentals.
Mark, thank you for helping us understand. I want to give our guests a chance to respond to that. Brian, you know, you work in student learning and technology. What about Mark's concerns? How can you respond?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Mark. I came from the classroom originally, and I really still try to encourage teachers. Although I'm the technology coordinator, I straight up tell them, do not use technology 100%. We still need to go back to the basics, as you said, Mark. We have students doing STEM engineering projects where they're building things with paper towel tubes and construction paper. We still have that piece in our schools. There's a push right now that even though some of these technologies are growing so quickly, we know that we still need to integrate some of those hands-on projects for our students. We need to give them the opportunity to build that the different hand-eye coordinations and the different technology skills at the same time. Although I know that there is a fear that technology is going to remove a lot of that, I think it's our job as educators to make sure that students are still getting a good mix of the low tech and the high tech.
And Rocco, we heard a little bit, I think, of your answer to this earlier when you talked about how AI is a tool and then it needs to be filtered through the instructor, through the teacher, through human beings. How do you help Mark understand how you see technology playing a role in classrooms?
Yeah, this is a great topic. I really think the greatest thing in the classroom is a fantastic teacher. You can't replace amazing teachers who not only mentor kids, but also structure their learning in a developmentally appropriate ways with great tools. And so, for example, I mean, I also came from the classroom. I came from teaching kindergarten for 7 years, taught third grade for a while before I got into my current position. And one of the things that we do in NENA is emphasize blended learning, capital B, capital L, blended learning. And one of the many ideas in that philosophy is really to decide what is the best media, what is the best tool to teach these particular standards or targets. And so, for example, in the younger grades in NENA, we have an emphasis on a math strategy, AVMR, which is a lot of hands-on, which is a lot of what is in the early elementary grades, like kindergarten, pre-K, what does it mean to hide one, take one, add one? And what does that look like in the physical world? And we're building that cognitive sort of understanding of the basics of math. And AVMR grows up the grade levels with the kids with hands-on tools, building that foundational, deeper understanding of mathematics, for example. Now, as kids start off, in our schools are very concrete thinkers. And as they develop and grow, they become more abstract. And I think technology tools tend to actually do the same thing. We start with very concrete uses of tools, but by the time we're in middle school, high school, we're using our technology and our services that our Chromebooks connect to in more abstract ways. It's a great point. I really don't think you know, technology use will replace the foundations. I know there's still a huge, strong, healthy push for foundational understanding of reading and math in the NENA Joint School District. And I hope that our technologies just enhance that in the hands of great teachers.
And Rocco, when you talk with other coordinators, other technologists, do you see the same thing beyond NENA?
Well, granted, this is my first year in the position, but mm-hmm. I have spoken with a lot of directors and coordinators of mm-hmm. technology. And I think we're more similar than we are different on these topics.
Excellent. We've got Brian Gannon, who is a student learning and technology coordinator for South Milwaukee Public Schools. And we're also talking with, you just heard, Rocco Marchanda, who directs instructional technology at Neenah Public Schools. And we are just halfway through our discussion about technology in our school systems. We are talking about how students are using it. We're talking about how teachers can incorporate it, whether they should and when, how we handle artificial intelligence in our school systems. We are still looking toward getting into talking about having individual devices, handling access to broadband and to other necessary pieces of the technology puzzle for students to be successful. Join the conversation as we continue with your question or your comment. You can call 800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. I'm Keely Boltina, and you're listening to The Morning Show. This is the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. Students in Wisconsin's K-12 schools have never lived in a world without the internet. Internet access is fundamental in education now, and so are developing the skills that one will need to use technology outside of the classroom. What questions do you have as we talk about technology in education? Call 800-642-1234. You can also share your experiences on the phone or by emailing ideas@wpr.org. Jim in Hustisford is on the line. Hi, Jim.
Hey. Hello, thank you for taking my call. I spent 30 years as a military, you know, IT tech, and so I'm all for, you know, computers and systems. But after I retired from the military, I became a teacher. I was teaching fourth grade for the last 10 years up in Alaska. And what I'm seeing is the elementary school kids, especially, are spending way too much time on the screen. They have their telephones, you know, and everything else. And now you're encouraging, well, it's not that the elementary side is going to be using the AI, but I think that they need more social time. With the COVID, you know, they were all isolated. They need to exercise. They need to be outside running and playing. I'm all for, you know, some education in electronics and in information systems, but there's got to be more social skills, more activity. The students need to exercise and spend more time that way. And that's my observation.
Thanks for giving us a call, Jim. Brian Gannon, student learning and technology coordinator for the South Milwaukee School District. Brian, talking about that balance, especially in the aftermath of COVID.
Yeah, Jim, thanks for the comment. This is something that I commented on a little bit earlier, but I'll reemphasize it. We absolutely agree with you. The balance of technology and interactions, face-to-face interactions, play, activity, that's something that we absolutely do not want to take away from our students, especially at the early elementary grades. Unfortunately, we know that the pandemic kind of forced our hand in getting devices out to students. Prior to that, we did not have devices, one-to-one at least, in our early elementaries. Even as we came back from the pandemic, we've been talking with classroom teachers, and if you were to visit any of the schools in South Milwaukee, you would see our kindergarten through fourth grade, really, the majority of their day is not on the device. Now, we do have some online programs that students need their device to access, and they're there for them when they need it. But our teachers still are emphasizing, let's get outside for recess. Let's go to gym. Let's go to the library and read some books. So that time off the screen is extremely important, because we can control what we can control. Obviously, we don't know what's happening when students go home. If they have access to a phone or other device at home, we can't control that. So absolutely, we are still pushing and encouraging teachers to use all sorts of different activities for students to do to stay engaged. and to keep time off the screen as much as possible. Mm-hmm.
Thanks again for that question, Jim, and comment. Jim brought up the COVID-19 pandemic. In about the first year of the pandemic, federal lawmakers doled out $190 billion in emergency aid to K-12 schools, and schools have until September next year to spend the money. Rocco Marchanda, you direct instructional technology at the Neenah Joint School District. How is your school tech budget preparing for the end of that funding?
That's a great question. It's a question that all departments are kind of facing right now. I'm going to say that we're very fortunate, Neenah. We have had our infrastructure to deal with something like a pandemic like COVID for quite a while before it came. We've been one-to-one in grades pre-K through 12 for, a few years before the pandemic.
And when you say one-to-one, you mean you have one device for every individual student?
Yes, one mm-hmm. device for every student, correct. And beyond that, we have also had a learning management system, which is a virtual extension of a classroom. We've had teachers using a learning management system and being trained and accountable to learning how to use a learning management for five years before the pandemic. And we were also fortunate enough to work with the DPI on digital learning days. So we don't really have snow days anymore, Neenah. Our students K through 12 can take their devices home and continue learning during those snow days. So when, and I'll get to the budget, when COVID hit, our teachers were prepared to step into digital learning. And the biggest challenge was extending how long we had to keep quality learning going on. Now, as far as our budget goes, here, Neenah, we really aren't going to be affected too much because our community has supported us having one-to-one devices and having a budget for this and the network and infrastructure to sustain these tools for a while. So we're in a very fortunate, and I'm in a very thankful position here in the Neenah Joint School District.
Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily the case all across the board. Technology budgets can certainly vary by district. Brian, what are you seeing when thinking about balancing the budget with the technological needs of the district?
Unfortunately for, I guess, this story, we are in a very similar position to Neenah. I think we were approaching full capacity prior to the pandemic. So we built up our budget in a way that was going to be able to support that. But to address some of the concerns that you're talking about, I know in talking with other tech directors from around the state, there are some more rural communities who didn't have the broadband capabilities to support students all having a device. A lot of homes around the state don't have the broadband access. So trying to build that up and support families with that has been a struggle for a lot of districts. One thing that I know in South Milwaukee in particular, as we got some of those federal funds to combat all the effects of the pandemic, we were intentional to not put those funds towards things that were going to need to be funded continuously. So a tech budget, you know you're going to need this money for forever. So we built up the budget in a way throughout the district and specifically the technology in a way that we would be able to sustain that moving forward and not relying on the one-time funding that we knew was going to fall off.
Mm-hmm. The U.S. Census says roughly 14% of Wisconsin households still lack any broadband capabilities. So how do you accommodate children living in homes without the internet, Brian?
Yeah, so we did face that. A pretty significant number of families in our community who did not have strong enough wireless access. They may have cell phones in their home and relying on cellular data, but to get that Chromebook to work at their house or whatever device they may be using, they needed reliable Wi-Fi. So we actually purchased as a district dozens of internet hotspots that were then distributed to families on an as-needed basis. So we could tell right away the students who did not have the connection they needed, you know, the student whose screen was glitching out every 5 seconds, or they just couldn't connect. And we reached out to those families and said, hey, we've got these hotspots. Can we offer you one that's going to give you the wireless connection that you need to be able to connect your student's device and get them online during the pandemic? While doing that, we also shared out some of the resources. Obviously, the federal government and the state government have both been doing some major pushes to enhance broadband throughout the state. So a lot of deals are being put out there by some of the internet providers. You know, families who qualify for free and reduced lunch can get discounted internet rates. So we tried to share a lot of those resources as well. So the hotspot wasn't necessarily a forever solution, but here are some other resources that you could possibly use to get your home connected. And again, we're lucky that we live in a urban community where connections are pretty easy to come by. Again, some of the more rural communities in Wisconsin, trying to find some of those connections may mean running fiber hundreds of miles. So it's not as easy to do. So facing that challenge here in South Milwaukee was a little bit easier. And we do feel like we closed that gap for a lot of families.
That's Brian Gannon, Student Learning and Technology Coordinator for South Milwaukee Public Schools. We're also talking with Rocco Marchanda, who directs instructional technology at the Neenah Public Schools. Our conversation spans developments and changes with technology in schools. There's still time for your questions or thoughts. You can call 800-642-1234. I'm Keely Boltina. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina. We have technology leaders from two Wisconsin school districts walking us through new challenges and opportunities and ongoing issues that they see having tech in the classroom. You're part of this conversation. You can call 800-642-1234. Ask your question or share your experience. Brian Gannon is with South Milwaukee. Rocco Marchanda is with Neenah Public Schools. Rocco, you mentioned that Neenah is one-to-one, so every student has an opportunity to have and use a device. You allow fifth graders and up to take Chromebooks home with them every day. What makes fifth grade the right age to then say, here's this iPad or this laptop or this Chromebook, go ahead and take it off school grounds, we trust you?
Sure, that's a good question. And technically, we don't keep any grade level from sending their devices. We do encourage, if the device is going home, that there's a meaningful lesson that the student is doing at home on their own. And to kind of go back to, I think it was Jim, one of the points of emphasis we have on instructional technology here is screen time. And we want to make sure that we have a precise screen time where students are doing more creating than consuming when they're in front of a device. We do have kindergarten teachers that will send home their Chromebook and have the child go take a picture of anything that is a group of four at their house, or a square, or a little older up. We might have second grade teachers having a student go home and take a picture of an obtuse angle in your house, and then submit that through our learning management system. Things like that. And it's not every day in the elementary, but we do encourage, if they have meaningful activities that connects the home to school, that they can certainly bring those devices home. In the secondary, which here in Neenah, we built a new high school, and we reconfigured our elementary, or our, I'm sorry, we did configure our elementaries to be K through four, and our middle school now is 5 through 8. So I kind of picked 5 because that is the signifying grade of our middle school. And typically in middle school, that's when we have teachers starting to assign a bit of work for home. A lot of times we just have the chargers at home, so students are responsible to go home and charge that device and bring it back. And excuse me, damage is certainly a thing to consider when you do something like this. We're not too concerned about it, because in the purchase of our Chromebooks, we have built in support for damages. We are not a school that fixes our own devices. We have that built into the cost of these devices.
Sure. So we're back to budget. Brian, with so many students having access to those individual devices, I know we're starting the school year, but as you look toward the end of the school year, is recovering those devices a challenge?
Well, we've actually made a decision in the past couple years, if for the students who are taking their devices home, we allow them to hold on to their device over the summer, bring them back in the fall. We've been keeping track of some numbers over the years to decide, is that cost beneficial? We understand. Like Rocco said, we're going to have some damages, right? We have some students who took their device on vacation over the summer and it got broken. That's where we have the same type of partnership with a repair company who can take care of those for us. The bigger concern for us are the students who actually unenroll from our district and move to another district or out of the state. Trying to recapture that device from the student before they're off the grid, before we can't find them anymore, that's more of a challenge. But we've got several people who, as soon as they hear about a student unenrolling, are reaching out, trying to get any of the materials back that a student might have. And we have a pretty high success rate with that. So the lost or disappearing Chromebooks are more of a concern for us than the damage. But we sometimes say it's kind of the cost of doing business as well. Mm-hmm. We know that it's going to happen, and we have to kind of build that into some of our budgeting as well.
Yeah. I mean, I drop my cell phone about 37 times a day, so I really can't critique a student for some accidents when you're dealing with that many numbers. You're just going to have some of those damages you have to deal with. We are taking calls at 800-642-1234 as we talk with Brian Gannon and Rocco Marchanda, both working on technology in public school systems in Wisconsin. We've got Katie in Wanakee who has a question for us. Hey, Katie.
Hi, I'm curious about the vetting process for software applications in terms of data collection and privacy concerns. And then on top of that, what kind of training do teachers receive to kind of vet those applications that they're choosing for their own classroom that aren't necessarily vetted by the IT department?
Thanks, Katie. Appreciate the question. Rocco, how are we going to make sure that students' data is protected so that, we don't have data mining happening on our students on school devices?
Yeah, this is a great question. And before I was in my current position, my job was instructional systems manager, and I dealt with exactly this. When I started the position in Neenah, we had probably 5 services, and now we probably have somewhere close to 50, 60 services. And one of the things that we do here in NENA is when a curriculum or special education department or IT department wants to use a service that students are going to be involved in, we go through a whole vetting process with the vendor themselves. We make sure we go through their terms of use, the privacy statement. If they are a partner in the Student Data Consortium, that is a big plus, where they promise to adhere to certain standards with data privacy. In addition to that, we use tools like ClassLink and Clever to transfer data from our systems securely through the internet to these services. And it's a huge concern to make sure that we're getting in relationships or with partners that respect student data and privacy as much as we do. And we won't go into business with vendors that do not adhere to a certain level of this. As a matter of fact, even with teachers, we vet apps that teachers can use, and we have a green list and a red list of apps. And as teachers find new apps and new services online, we encourage them to reach out to our instructional team so that we can vet them. We don't want to cut teachers off completely from being creative and finding new tools, because certainly in the past, these new tools have guided us on what is effective in the classroom. So when a teacher is interested in new tools, they reach out to our instructional team, and we go through a process and make sure that the tools that they're using adhere to our standards of student privacy.
Brian, what would you like to add when thinking about student privacy and data?
Well, I'll lift up a system or a program, actually, that is a national-wide student data privacy consortium that is available to all the schools within Wisconsin. It's completely free for districts to sign up. And basically what it does is it's a consortium of schools who are vetting, as Rocco mentioned, vetting these vendors, sometimes even rewriting contracts to make sure that the student data is protected. And what it does is it allows one district to create that contract with a vendor, and then other districts can just sign on to that same contract. So it's just a web portal that districts can go into, and they say, yep, I'm using that tool as well. I'm going to sign on to that agreement. And sometimes it's just the standard contract if the vendor has a strong enough student data privacy language, or it's got that addendum to it that says, nope, you're also going to do X, Y, and Z to protect our data. So it's a great system. It's got hundreds of vendors and software titles in the portal. So it allows, again, mm-hmm. districts to quickly sign onto that agreement to make sure that these vendors are holding true to what they say about student data.
Excellent. I want to thank Brian Gannon, Student Learning and Technology Coordinator for the South Milwaukee School District, and also Rocco Marchanda, who directs Instructional Technology at the NENA Joint School District. Thank you so much for being with us as we've been talking about technology in schools from individual devices and beyond. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Voltina, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.